fine people out there in podcast land. I'm your hostess, Suzanne A. Wells, and this is episode 162 of eBay the Right Way. My guest is Cassie in Illinois. Announcements. This is more of a shout out. Lucretia Gann posted this message on my Facebook group. She said, "I just got your Bolo book for 2024. I have every one of them and can never wait to get them. I get so much good information out of them. I saw the Jingle Bell Santa on page 115. I immediately remembered that there was one in my mom's closet that she'd had for several years. She passed away a few years ago, but it was a Santa collection. Me and my brother are still going through their house as my dad passed away 2 years ago. I ran up there and got it. Now I'm going to list it and see what happens. I always find something great in your book." And I love hearing this feedback because when I started making these books, it was more about learning about things before you saw them so you would know what to look for at thrift stores, estate sales, garage sales, wherever you're getting stuff. And then people started letting me know that, hey, I've got one of these in my attic. You know, my mom has one of these. I hear this all the time. So that's just another way to look at the information in this book is you might already have things and not know they have value. And you can use these books as like an encyclopedia. There's different volumes. There's all different items. And it's just going to help you with your eBay business, whether you already have the items or you're going to see them out in the wild and think, oh yeah, that was in the book. Now I know. So thank you for sending in your testimonial, Lucretia, and I hope you find more stuff. Okay, on to the chat with Cassie.
Welcome back, eBay sellers. I have a repeat offender this week, Cassie. Welcome back, Cassie. And tell us again where you're located.
I am in Lockport, Illinois, which is a suburb outside of Chicago.
Oh, so we're in the same state now.
Yeah, we are. You're probably about 5 hours away, I think.
Yeah. We're down between Jacksonville and Jerseyville. Those are the two towns we go to for anything. So yeah, kind of far away. But I did get on the Illinois citywide, townwide Facebook group for garage sales. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I'm in all the garage sale groups in the area, in the state, and all that. So I'm always looking for sales. And
yeah, well, I've never seen a group with the whole state where everybody just submits their citywide, townwide sale. So that is great. Some of the submissions are like a month out, so you can really plan.
Yeah, because it's usually like the park district or the town board, however they run it, it's usually through them. So they plan it and you have to apply to be a part of it.
Yes. And it's, or it's like certain subdivisions. I keep seeing Iroquois Lake, like that's a big area. So I'm like, oh, I got to find out where that, it's 3 hours away. Probably not going to do that, but
yeah. Well, you could probably go into St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of options. Alton is another place I have not explored yet. So it's, as we discussed before we started recording, I've been getting all my technology figured out, which has been an ordeal, but now I got all that done. I can get back to treasure hunting.
Yeah. And there's going to be like barn sales down there.
Yes. Yes. Looking for that.
Which are bigger estate sales. They have a whole barn to put everything in them.
Yes. And I mean, the word of mouth is amazing in these small towns. Yesterday I had my eBay shipping supplies, you know, that you get with the coupon every quarter. I got an email. It's been delivered. Went out there. Nothing. It's not delivered. Well, on the Facebook group of the town we're in, somebody was like, who is Wells, I got her a package for her, and I don't know who she is. And all these people were like, oh yeah, we know her. And this person called me and was like, hey, I got your package. It's like, that would never happen in a big city. Just, it would be like too bad, so sad, you know?
Yeah, that happens out here sometimes. My local group, I see that where people are like, oh, I got this package. Do any of you know who it is? And all that. But
yeah, and the lady who works at the post office was, because it came on a Ryder truck that is, I guess, FedEx. Mm-hmm. And the lady from the post office was like, oh, yeah. Because I went in there and introduced myself and, you know, how do you want me to do my my pickups and all that stuff, you know, and I was impressed. I was like, that is wonderful that somebody would just try to find the owner of a package they got by mistake. I love it.
Yeah, it not living in a larger city, that happens a lot more than you would think.
Way to use technology for good, right?
Yeah, I know, for once. Yeah. My mail gets mixed up all the time because I live in townhouses and they can't always tell which townhouse the address belongs to. So I get my neighbor's mail all the time. So I'm always like going over there and.
Right. And yeah. That's like a part of it. Yeah, exactly. So that's the world we live in. But enough about mail. Let's talk about what you've been up to. Just to recap, you're still caring for your grandmother and kind of going through her things. Okay.
She's doing a lot better now. When I last talked to you, she was in the hospital for a little bit, but she's doing a lot better. She's moving better. And so I'm doing less of the taking care of her. She's resilient. So
good. Okay. And you work in the theater industry?
I work in theater and I would guess you would say entertainment because I work at a talent agency.
Right.
So it's like I work through, we do on camera work through that.
Okay.
So we submit actors for on camera jobs.
Oh, okay. So has the strike and all the issues in the entertainment industry affected your job?
Yeah, it was, that started over the summer and all the TV shows that film here, like Chicago Med, Fire and PD, they usually start in July, but they didn't start until December this year because of the strike. So it was only non-union work and our union actors couldn't work.
Uh-huh.
So it was a struggle but we got through it and we booked like 4 people on the season finale of Chicago Med. So.
Oh, good. Okay. I have a friend that runs a prop house in Atlanta and, you know, it's on and off. Like if there's a actor strike, writer strike, whatever. It's like, oh, there's nothing to do because there's nobody working right now. And so
Atlanta is a big filming area too.
Yes. Yes. But she said there may be another one coming up. There's talk about that. I don't know if it's.
Yeah, writer. There is.
Yeah,
there is. Cause they, the actors don't think they got all the AI protection that they were seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's a potential for that, but the contract they came up with is temporary and it hasn't been approved yet.
Okay.
So the members have to vote on it.
I see. Okay. So we'll have to watch for that. So anyway, what have you been up to as far as eBay? Have you had any fun sales since we talked?
Oh yeah, I've had a few fun sales. My mom is like selling off or is having me sell off all the stuff in her house that like belonged to us as kids that she would never let us open, like dolls and toys and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I sold, it wasn't Polly Pocket branded, but it was the style of Polly Pocket. It was a Cinderella castle. And it had like the little figures, and I sold that for $180. Oh, and I didn't have to pay a thing for that. It was still new in the package, so it had all the pieces.
And it's little, right?
It was actually like big. Oh. I'm doing hand motions and you won't be able to see that on the, it was probably as big as that fake computer screen behind you.
So maybe like 18 inches tall.
Yeah, something like that. Like the castle was big, but the figures were small because the castle opened up so you could move the figures around in each little area.
Yeah, those Polly Pocket and Little's Pet Shop, those are hot.
Yeah. It's because those were kind of people my age. And now they have like nice paying jobs and all that. So they're buying back their childhood.
Right. And what year were you born?
1989.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you're in that group that's like, oh, I got all this stuff. What am I going to do with it? Might as well see what it's worth.
Yeah. So I did that. And I have a bunch of sales on Mercari, which is why I wanted to come on again and talk to you about multi-listing.
Yes, yes, go right into that. Yeah, you contacted me because there's always a lot of questions about that on the group, and it is confusing if you don't know how to do it. So the floor is yours. Yeah.
So for me, multi-listing just makes sense because I don't like to put all my eggs in one basket and I have enough time to do it. But I, within the last 2 years, I have employed the use of a service. The one I use is called List Perfectly. Mm-hmm. And what's good about that one is you can put everything you already have in your store into the List Perfectly catalog just by installing the browser extension. And then you can repost it from there. So you don't have to upload everything to List Perfectly on your own.
Okay.
It'll import it for you.
Okay.
But I kind of list in a little bit of an odd way. Because some people will list directly into List Perfectly. They'll take all their pictures and upload them and then make the listing on List Perfectly and then repost from there. But I do it a little differently because I don't want to mess with like bringing all the photos to my computer and all of that because they don't have a mobile app right now. So it's the way I found to do it that's easy for me is when I'm taking pictures, I'll list it directly on Mercari. Well, because Mercari has a very simple, it doesn't ask like 50 million questions like eBay does. Okay. I love eBay, but it can be daunting for someone new to it because when they go to list, there's like three pages of questions about the item. And it's harder to do that from mobile.
Yes.
Because that's how I take all my pictures. So I will upload directly to Mercari and have that listing on Mercari. And then when I finish my listings, like listing everything on Mercari, I go to my computer and then I'll import the listings from Mercari to List Perfectly. And then that will copy my listings to eBay. I do Facebook Marketplace, and that's been kind of dead recently, but I still post there. And there's a site that I post like toys and kids stuff on and stuff for women. It's called Kidsian.
Yes. And it's been around a while.
Yeah. And I don't make a lot of sales on there. I've made a few. It's like maybe one every 2 or 3 months, but I'm selling stuff that I wasn't able to sell elsewhere.
Right.
So, and I think just even having that, it's not a platform you have to babysit. So I'm okay with that. I don't list to Poshmark just because that's something you have to babysit. And then I would have to pay for another service, probably to share everything constantly. And it's just, it's not for me, but other people enjoy it. But right. you can list from List Perfectly to Poshmark. And they have a few other like smaller reselling websites on there, like Vestiaire and Grailed. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Grailed.
I think Grailed is men's clothes.
Men's clothes. Okay. I knew it was tied to clothing somehow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so let me jump in with the comment about eBay getting more complicated, or whatever you want to call it, with the item specifics. I mean, they just keep adding more and more and more. And that's really for the buyer. So they can sort and filter down, like, you know, I want a men's sweater. I want it to be red. I want it to be made of wool, this size, you know, made in whatever country, and just all this stuff that I don't know that buyers really look for that. I mean, I think it's just getting overkill because it's becoming such a pain in the rear to do your listings for certain categories. Like vintage items are pretty easy. There's not a whole lot of item specifics. And that's another reason I'm kind of going in that direction and not doing so many, you know, clothing items, because it just takes forever to list it. And then you get all these alerts, you know, 112 of your listings need to be updated because you didn't click every single item specific. And I'm sorry, eBay, but that is just taking the fun out of it.
Yeah, I think most people, they don't put on those filters when they're searching.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would get caught up in those questions. I think they just search in the main search bar, and what's going to come up is the stuff in the title, because that doesn't search the item specifics. Right? Mm-hmm. So I think if you have a good title, you're going to sell it with the keywords and
yeah, I mean, want your listing to be as complete as possible, but there's also a time factor there, and also promoted listings. Like, if you're selling just, you know, regular thrift store clothing, it's not vintage, it's just mainstream stuff. It's very competitive, and
it
so
is.
If you're not doing promoted listings, are you going to be seen? And that just builds the case for the unusual, rare, truly limited in number type items, because you don't have to worry about all that. You know, if you've got Levi's jeans, you know, size 32, 30, whatever, and, you know, there's 2,000 of them, that's going to be really hard to get seen. But if you've got a vintage Levi's trucker jacket, you know, there's only 4 of them for sale. That's what you want to do is try to find those items limited in number, at least from a effort standpoint. It's like, you don't have to list as many things if you buy your dollar, and then you don't have to be on that gerbil wheel of just listing all the time to get a sale. That's just what I've experienced. This is my 21st year on eBay. And it's like, it didn't used to be like this. You used to be able to sell pretty much anything, but now it's just gotten so competitive. You really have to rethink how you're spending your time when you're listing stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I've been looking more through sell-through rate, like how many are listed and how many have sold. So when I find an item, I will go through it, through the search process for it. And then if there's 50 listed and only 3 of them have sold, I'm not going to pick it up because I'm competing with 50 other people.
Right. And even if it's something in the past, like, oh, I've sold this before and it's not the same anymore. You know, yeah, maybe I did sell it before 3 years ago, but it's not the same now. It's just the market's flooded with all the mainstream kind of stuff. And you just constantly have to be on the cutting edge of like, what do people want now? What are they doing now? What's the trend now? What are people not able to find? And instead of just, I'm going to go to the thrift store and buy as much stuff as I can, it's like, you really have to refine what you're doing because it's all about time.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Because you have to, is it really worth it to put the time into something that's going to be the 150th listing of that type? And you got to compete with every other person. And you have to pick and choose what you is worth your time and what's worth your storage space as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Somebody approached me to sell it's like an old timey cash register, you know, like,
yeah,
beautiful
with the handle.
With the beautiful scroll work in the metal. And I'm like, yeah, but the thing weighs 80 pounds. Like, I don't want to, it's beautiful. But I don't want to even have to deal with that. Just even picking it up, taking pictures of shipping it. Yeah, you can sell it locally, but something like that, you want to open up to as many people as you can for collectors. But just the longer I do this, the more I'm like, yeah, I can make money on that, but do I want to? Or would I rather sell this jar of buttons? You know, that's like,
yeah,
timey bake like buttons and stuff. Like, oh, that really appeals to me. You know, that's easy to ship. It's definitely unusual. People want that. So you constantly have to keep reinventing yourself in this business for things to keep working.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I do list on multiple sites. I have been making, my two main platforms are Mercari and eBay. That's where I make the most money. And eBay has been doing better than Mercari lately. But I do that because I want as many eyes on it as possible. And some items sell better on Mercari. Like, there's a lot of collectors that are on Mercari. The reason I found out about it is because I collect American Girl dolls.
Right.
And someone I follow on Instagram posted, oh, here's this great new site where you can find American Girl doll accessories and clothes. And maybe like if you're missing a hat or a skirt to an outfit, people will have it there. So I checked it out and I started listing some stuff on there. And I find Mercari is just more of a collector's market. Like the Loungefly bags sell better on Mercari. And Disney stuff sells better on Mercari.
Okay. So, yeah, you have to be aware of the shift. Where are the buyers for those particular items?
Yeah, and I do list everything on all the platforms I list on, but I usually have a feeling of where something is going to sell.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's funny how the more you do this, the more you're like, I bet this goes to California. Yeah, I bet this goes pretty fast. I bet this goes, I pay attention to that. When I was doing my health and beauty and grocery business on eBay UK. Now this was back, 2010 maybe. That idea is over for the listener. Yeah. It's like there's so many eBay sites. This was back when eBay UK was the only other one besides eBay USA. So anyway, a bunch of people were like selling stuff directly on that site. But it was interesting to see sleep products like melatonin or any of the over-the-counter sleep products would go to Norway, the land of the midnight sun, where it's hard for them to sleep because they get certain times of the year, they get so much sunlight, like your body can't comprehend that, like it's time to sleep. Or skincare stuff would go to Spain and Italy. Like,
yeah, all the fun over there.
Well, all those cultures are very into beauty and then the sun protection for all the beautiful exotic beaches over there. And then, lip stuff like Abreva and Blistex and all that kind of, for chapped lips would go to London where it rains all the time and his lips are chapped. So it's like,
yeah,
if you pay attention, sometimes you can identify a trend like that, but, it's just paying attention. Yeah,
exactly. It's weird because I sell a lot of Disney stuff because I like Disney and I know a lot about the collectibles and what people are looking for. Uh-huh. So it's just like a knowledge I have. So I've noticed, strangely enough, that a lot of my Disney stuff goes to California and Florida. And like, you guys have parks there. Why are you buying park stuff for me?
Well, and is it like costumes that the kids are wearing to Disney, or is it just the collectibles?
It's mostly collectibles. Like, I just sold a vintage Winnie the Pooh keychain, which is like, it's beaded and it spells out Pooh. And uh-huh. That's going to Florida. I'm like, I guess it's vintage, but it's just weird to me that these people who are close to the parks are buying all the merchandise.
Well, I wonder, now my mom lived in Port St. Lucie, which was a couple hours from Orlando. And they would, in their 80s and late 70s, they would go to Disney. They had the season pass and all that stuff. And they would go up there and, you know, just do the restaurants or whatever. But I learned that people around Orlando were some of the biggest collectors. You know, they'd have the Christmas tree with all the Disney ornaments. And I think maybe it's because they're so close to it that it's accessible. Yeah. It's accessible for them to accumulate. And they'll go to garage sales and they'll see Disney stuff from other people that, you know, overbought crap at the parks, I say. But maybe because it's accessible and they can get into it.
That's true.
Something to think about.
That does make a lot of sense. But that's like one trend I've noticed. And because I still sell some playbills sometimes, and those usually go to places where the touring companies and obviously the New York companies, they're not touring there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these people like theater and they would like playbills with their favorite actors. And I have a repeat buyer of mine who buys like every single playbill I have listed, as long as it's not like a duplicate of one he already has. Mm-hmm. And he has playbill in his username. And he just collects playbills. And I think he's like in a more rural area, because I looked it up once and it was not Nashville or Atlanta or someplace where these touring companies stop. So he doesn't have much of a chance.
Well, and maybe he lived in New York and got into collecting all that stuff and then, you know, became older and moved somewhere else to live with family or where, you know, family could keep an eye on them. That happens all the time. People move to a different state because.
Yeah, you just did.
Well, I mean, I didn't do it because I need to be taken care of.
Yeah, that's true. You
know, for example, you know, my mom passed away last year and her man is considering moving back to Atlanta so that his grown kids are all there and they can help him. So you never know, like, the shift of stuff getting moved around. Just because this guy's in a rural area doesn't mean he's always been there. Or, you know, like, I've lived in like 8 different states in my life and I just move around. Like, I chase the opportunities, so I'm okay with that. But as far as the playbill stuff, you posted something recently that sold for a lot of money. Do you remember what that was?
Oh, yeah, it was a doll.
Okay, what's the story behind that?
That was one of the things my mom gave me to sell.
Okay.
And that sold for $70.
And what kind of doll was it?
It was like a special collector's edition of Mulan, where they released four different dolls for each of the seasons, and she was Spring. And these were only available for a very short time, and they made limited quantities.
Okay.
And that belonged to my sister, and she was never allowed to open it. and she has no use for it now because she wouldn't let her kids play with it. But so it was given to me to sell. And I actually, after this, I have to respond to that buyer because he's freaking out because the package isn't there yet.
Oh, I got one of those too. Yeah, I've got one that is it was a combination of feed sacks. It's like we're finding all kinds of stuff around here. but it only went to Minnesota, which is very close to where I am. And it's been stuck for 9 days.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to file a lost item report because it's always magical when you file that report, they find it.
Okay, so there was an announcement on in your eBay seller hub last week, it's April 10th, about this problem, the USPS slowdown, things getting stuck. And there was a big discussion on the Facebook group. There was like 50 comments like that happened to me.
I did see a bunch of people in the different eBay Facebook groups saying that it was slowing down.
So do you know what the fix is? Have you looked into that yet? Because that's like on my list today. It's like, okay, well, what's the next step? Here's the tracking number. We know it's stuck.
On my list today too. But I find usually when you file that lost item report on USPS, if it's with USPS, obviously it would be if it's stuck there. If you file that lost item report, somehow it starts moving again.
Okay, well, I will definitely do that. And that is a great tip for the listeners because I don't know if it has to do with ground advantage or what's going on with that. But it's just like all of a sudden, there's all these stuck packages. Like what was the catalyst? What caused that? You know?
Yeah, there wasn't like a big weather event. I don't
know. I mean, there's always weather events. That's the thing is like, you got everything from blizzards and tornadoes and fires and all the kind of natural weather events that happen all the time. But the discussion I saw was more about like, I have no idea why it's stuck. It was only going 50 miles from me or, you know, next state over or whatever. And it just seems to be happening more often now. Does that mean that, you know, this is the new normal, you know, ground advantage is going to take 9 days to go 50 miles. Cause that's not really acceptable on my end.
No, it's not. This package, it's been about like a week and a half, I think.
Uh-huh.
So he's getting really nervous and he's like, oh, is she lost? He's obviously a doll collector. Cause he's saying, oh, is she lost? Are they going to be able to find her?
Did you reply to him? And like, what did you say when you replied?
The first time he messaged me, I replied to him. I told him that there are some backups with the postal service. Tracking said it was moving at that time.
Okay.
And it said it was going to be delivered. It said it was going to be delivered by the end of the week, last week.
Okay.
So he's getting more nervous and I need to respond to him because he messaged me in the middle of the night, actually.
I know. It's hard to know what to say because you don't want to be that seller that's like, well, we shipped it. And now that it's in the post office's hands, we have no control over anything. you know, you don't, because as a buyer, you don't want to hear that. I mean, I've had stuff that I ordered and I'm like, why is this taking so long? And I guess all we can do is just, you know, watch the tracking and, you know, we're as frustrated as you are. We want you to have your item kind of like, play the good cop. Like, oh, you know, we're so sorry. We, you know, we'll just keep watching it and check with eBay on what we're supposed to do next.
Yeah, exactly. And I always try to, if it's the more the item sold for, it's more important to me. Like if it's a $5 item, like I'll respond if it's a $5 item, but I can't put too much effort into that. Not that I sell a ton of $5 items, but.
Right. Yeah. The higher the price, the more effort you're going to put into tracking it and stuff. I mean, that's logical. You know, if you were a restaurant and somebody complained about, you know, an order of French fries, okay, here's another order or here's your money back, go away. But if it's like a $100 item, you're going to have to eat that if it doesn't show up. That's different.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to respect that this person spent their money with me, and we are a customer service business, basically.
Right.
And he chose to spend his money with me, and I want to respect that. And it was a good chunk of money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I don't want to brush him off, but I can just tell he's, like, from the way he's messaging me, he's getting very nervous.
Well, and I would too.
I would too. I've had a few packages. They haven't gotten lost, but I had one package take like 2.5 weeks to get here, and it was shipping from California, and that usually doesn't take that long. But what made it take long was they were using that UPS USPS combination.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like impossible to track. I forget what they call
it. That makes me nervous, that handoff thing when it changes from one carrier to another. That's just an opportunity for a black hole. You know, your package is going to fall in that black hole.
Yeah, I got it. And it was the wrong size. It was the wrong size. So I had to, and then I'm like, you guys sent me the wrong size. They sent me like a 4X. I'm like, well, I got a new pajama shirt.
Yeah, really? Okay.
They did good customer service on that one and sent me a new one for free. It didn't take as long.
Oh, good. Do you have any other sales you want to talk about?
Yeah, I sold a Yadro figure.
Oh, Yadro. I love that stuff. For the listeners, it's spelled LLADRO, and it's from Spain, I believe.
Yeah, and it was again my mom's. It was a figure of a woman golfing,
mm-hmm.
And it's vintage and it's retired, and they didn't make a lot of them, and that sold for $70. It was in like perfect condition, even the club with the little. If the club's like a little skinny piece of metal. Right.
Yeah. And that could easily break off. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was in like perfect condition. So my mom took care of her. She takes care of her like porcelain and all that. And she kept them away from us. We had, I grew up with three younger sisters. So
does she have a Yadro collection or just different ceramics, porcelain?
She doesn't have a Yadro collection. She has a few, but it was more like if it appealed to her that she would get it.
Okay.
Like that one is because she was really into golf at that time. And that's what she did for fun was go golfing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she can't do that anymore because her knee is messed up. But yeah, and then I also sold this book called The Last of the Great Brown Bear Men. And it's about this group of hunters, I believe.
Okay.
I didn't read the book, but it was signed and it sold for $75. And I paid, I think, $3 for it at a garage sale.
Oh, good.
Not a garage sale. It wasn't a estate sale, but it was in a garage.
And so it was about hunting, you said?
Yeah, it's about hunting bears, I think. And it was signed by the author.
Okay.
Like the book goes for like $50 when it's not signed. Mm-hmm. But it went for $75 because it was signed. And the dust jacket was messed up because it's an old vintage book, but it's apparently really hard to find. But I had, I was surprised because I was looking it up while I was there. It didn't have a barcode on it or anything. And
you know, it's interesting you say that because I found a book like that last week at the library. I was up there using their internet before ours got fixed. And I noticed they had all these free books, you know, and I was like, well, I'm going to look through these. And even if it's no good, I can, you know, redonate it, or it's no loss since it's free. And I found one called Tom Foolery, which is about turkey hunting, like Tom Turkey. And it was also signed by the author, and it also did not have a barcode. And it was from 1997, I think. And I've got $50 on it just because there weren't very many out there. And it was on Amazon for that, I think. But it was just a, you know, like a paperback soft cover thing.
Oh, wow. Paperback.
Like very specific hunting book. So that's good news that yours sold. Maybe mine will sell too.
Yeah, I don't know anything about hunting at all. I picked it up because it looked like it was vintage, and it was something I had never heard of before. So I don't know if like what seasons you hunt certain animals in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe when it comes to turkey hunting season, your book will sell.
Yeah, yeah. That's just the rural life. You know, I guess I could have seen them in Georgia and South Carolina too, but I'm in a completely different place now. And it's very, there's a lot of things to learn. Like, what are people into? What do they want to know about? And it's refreshing to be in a different place. It's challenging, trust me, getting yourself here and getting all set up. But then it's like, everything's different. So I guess, I just don't like to be bored. I like constant stimulation, like new things all the time, like learning about new stuff.
Yeah. And I actually picked up some stuff because I learned about it in your library.
Oh, great.
It was like something you put like potpourri in.
Okay. Okay.
And it goes for $25. And I picked that up and I picked some, it was a Lennox piece I picked up that I usually shy away from the glassware stuff, but
yeah,
I've been becoming more confident in my ability to ship it because like I'll put as much bubble wrap on them as I can. As for like Mercari sales, two recent like bigger sales, I had a full set that I got at a garage sale of Winnie the Pooh bean bags.
Mm-hmm.
So I had like every single character. I paid like $10 for them. And I had them listed for like $80. And that was just like kind of high hopes. Mm-hmm. And this lady messaged me, she's like, I need these for a photo shoot or my husband's going to kill me. And we came down to $51 and that seems to be the going rate. But I sold those for $51 on Mercari, and I get full $51 because Mercari doesn't have seller fees anymore.
Oh, really? So how do they?
Yeah. They are charging the buyers.
Really?
A small fee. Yes. And then for your direct deposits, they were always charging $2 for instant deposits, but for direct deposits, Anytime it's $2. Okay. So they're making their money.
Well, that's a clever way to attract more sellers.
That change has happened within the last 2 weeks.
Oh, so that's new. Okay.
Yeah, it's very new and no one was expecting it. They just announced it. And then some Mercari specific groups and some people love it. Some people hate it. And the second if that went live, I made like 5 sales on Mercari. So
do you think there's going to be a big rush to sell on Mercari now that the fees are passed on to the buyer?
I think so. I've seen a lot of people say, well, I'm going to start selling on Mercari more, or I'm going to consider listing on Mercari. Cause I've had a few people recently ask me about how to start selling and how to list things. And I always tell them, start with Mercari just because it's simpler and I don't want to intimidate them with eBay. And then when you sell a few things, come talk to me again and I'll talk to you about eBay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just such a much more simple listing platform. And their platform is made for mobile listing, mm-hmm. which is what people are going to be doing, especially if they're starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom still does Easter baskets for me. I'm 34 years old and she still does Easter baskets. This is related, I swear. But she gave me, she works for Best Buy, so she gets all the pre-orders. She mm-hmm. gave me a video game and it came with this, like, it was the Princess Peach Showtime game. I'm keeping the game, obviously. But it came with this like acrylic stand set that you only got from Best Order. You only got from pre-orders from Best Buy. And it's just like a little set with figures and you put them in. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? So I sold it on Mercari for $25 in a day. So I made money off my Easter basket.
Well, and that's the adult you thinking. You know, hey, I'm not going to use this. Wonder how much it goes for. I keep finding stuff like that as I'm unpacking.
Yeah.
Kind of unpack my essential stuff. And then as we get this house, the renovation's done, it's like, okay, now we can put our stuff in this room. And so it's like, oh, why did I bring this? I wonder how much it sells for.
Yeah, I do that too. And like, I kind of have a rule if I won't list something under $8. If it goes for $8 or more, that's mine. I won't pick up something that sells for $8. But if it's mine and it's sitting in my room and it goes for more than $8, mm-hmm. I'll list it.
Yeah.
Because if there are people buying it, why don't I get, it's probably about $6. Why don't I get $6 for it instead of dropping it off at Goodwill?
Yeah, I mean, that's your bread and butter items. And the eBay algorithm likes sales, whether it's a $10 sale or $200 sale. If the algorithm sees that things sell in your, you don't even have to have a store, that things sell on your account, it will send you more traffic because, oh, this account is successful. Things sell from here. So that's, I call it a sacrifice sale. Sometimes you just got to take, if you're slow, you just got to take a lower offer, obviously not like if it's a $500 offer, you're not going to take $20 for it, but you know, it's like, yeah, I can let that go to get a sale. And then magically your sales pick up again.
Yeah. And I've been having some steady traffic on my eBay store recently. And I think it's because I've been making more sales and more higher dollar sales. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because I recently got like my first negative review ever. And right after that posted, I started getting way more sales.
Okay.
And it was strange, but I made a mistake in the sizing of a pair of shoes because it had like European sizing on it. Mm-hmm. And I Googled the the American size. And I guess I Googled it wrong. And I put they were size 10, but they're actually size 7 or something. That's at least what this woman said. And she messaged me about it, and she was huffing and puffing. And I was like, start a return. I'll let you return them to me. And she didn't. And then she just wrote the negative. And I, because you can comment on reviews. Like, mm-hmm. I offered her a return. She never responded or never started one.
Yeah, so, she just wanted to be mad at somebody that day, and you were it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an easy target online, because people can hide behind their computer, and they can be nasty, and they can be uncooperative, and there's no consequences. You know, they can just do whatever they want. And, you know, maybe she had an argument with her husband that day, or, you know, found out her mom had cancer or something, and she was just pissed off, and you were accessible. And
I'm this may not be a popular opinion. I rarely ever look at my eBay reviews or my Mercari reviews. I just, even if they're good, I just don't want to get hung up on looking at them and getting hung up on, I need feedback for this item. I need the feedback. I consider no feedback good feedback.
Yeah. No news is good news sometimes.
Exactly. And the only reason I checked it was because it popped up in that little area where it's like, oh, you have a negative review.
Okay.
So I went to check it. And most of my reviews are positive, obviously. But I don't know. And I also want to keep my head small and not be like, oh, I'm the best seller ever.
You know? Yeah, it keeps you human when you get a neutral or a negative. I mean, we don't like it. And especially if it's undeserved and you did everything you could to turn it around and the person just doesn't cooperate. You know, it's just, that's life. And that's, everybody's going to get that at some point, you know?
Exactly. And it's just, I don't want to think I can't make a mistake. Like, I recently made, this is the first time I've ever done it, and I hope it's the last time I've ever done it. I sent the wrong item to a buyer.
Yeah, it happens to everybody.
I switched the packages. And I thought before that, oh, I'll never do that. And they were the same size, and they weighed about the same, and I put the wrong label on them. And I tried to get them to return them to me, and the one guy wasn't being cooperative, so I just refunded both their money.
Yeah, that works. I did that within the last few months on a swimsuit. I had two exact same ones, Lands' End or L.L. Bean, exact same pattern, and I didn't remember that I had two. So the one that was purchased was a size 14. The one I sent was a size 2.
Oh yeah. That's
not going to work. And I didn't even have her send the wrong one back. I was like, oh, I'll send the right one right away. And she was, you know, she was nice and totally understood, but you know, it happens to everybody, you know?
Yeah. And the only reason I asked for them to send the wrong items back to me was because I wanted to get them, obviously at my expense. I wouldn't charge them again for shipping. I wanted to get them back to me so I could send the items to the right buyers.
Right. But, well, yeah, that was a different situation where you switched the packages. Right. And yeah, I've done it. And if you haven't done it, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's when. It'll happen at some point.
Yeah. So you just got to be open to I'm not a perfect person, but I can try to mitigate any potential mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely. Yeah. We're all just doing the best we can. We're all human. So that's all you can really do.
If you think you can't make mistakes, you're going to make more mistakes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's true. And that is a good point to end on. We're getting to the end here. And is there anything else you wanted to cover that we didn't?
No, I think I got everything.
Yeah, and I appreciate you reaching out to help others see about listing on multiple platforms and that there are tools for that. And there's several different tools out there. And
yeah, there's Reseller Kit, there's Vendue, and obviously List Perfectly. List Perfectly is just the one that I find works best for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it's about $30 a month. But I obviously make up for that with profits. It's just a business expense.
Right. So. Well, and that's exactly what you need to do for the listeners is, I get these questions all the time, like what's the best accounting thing and what's the best cross-listing thing? And it's what's going to work for you. Because if you ask 20 different sellers, you're going to get 20 different answers of what people use and why. So my advice is just experiment with them, you know, read up on them. If they have a free trial, do that and see if you like it. Because really, the only person's opinion that matters is yours and what works for your business.
Yeah, I'm not bashing anybody who uses any other listing service or multi-listing service because that's what works for them. If it works for you, that's what you have to do.
Right, exactly. Okay, Cassie, well, thank you so much for coming on again and good luck with all of your sales and parting with your childhood toys.
They weren't really my toys, though. I didn't get to play with them.
They were things that you remember from your childhood sitting on the shelf.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. And we'll look for your sales on the Facebook group. Thanks again. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Thanks again for coming on, Cassie. It was great reconnecting with you after all this time. And instead of a trivia question or a seller snippet, I wanted to share a brief discussion with you from the Facebook group because this is some great information to know. Lee posted, "Hi, I need advice on how many months a listing should remain if it's not selling. I have been leaving them for a year before I take them down. I'm facing storage issues." Okay, so there were several answers. Chuck said, "I end 5 things a day and sell similar. It's a constant rotation of old inventory that barely takes 5 minutes a day." And the reason for that is because eBay search puts it back at the top of the algorithm because the listing looks new, like it's never been there before. So when you're ending your listings, always choose sell similar, not relist, because you want it to look like a different item, and change some things around, some words in the title, jiggle the price up and down, change some things on the listing so that it appears like it's never been there before. And then Steve Gittler said, "I leave things up until they sell. I've sold a couple things recently that I listed in early 2022. But if you have limited storage, then you need to decide when to give up." So recheck Terapeak, do your research again if you've had the item a while and see if the price has changed. But yeah, when you have a space issue, that's a little bit different. Summer said, "I sold a cardigan sweater this week that I had listed for 4 years. Yes, I'm on board with that. I sell things all the time that I've had for years. And sometimes they're little tiny items like eyeglasses or gloves, things that don't take up much room. So yes, things will sell after a really long time." And then Karen said, "I had a book sale last week from 2015. Long tail is no joke in the book category." And then just more comments about individual sellers' strategies on dealing with inventory. But I am 100% convinced that ending and restarting listings does help. I sell things all the time that I just restarted a couple of days ago. So I am in that camp that does 5 to 10 listings a day, end and restart, reevaluate, change something on the listing because it bumps you back up to the top of the search algorithm. And sometimes you're stuck at home, you can't go outsourcing, you don't have anything left to list. I don't know if there's more death pilers out there or people that blow through stuff and need more items to list, but that's something you can do to work on your store when you don't have anything to list. Okay, I hope that's been helpful. Next week, my guest is Maggie, who is a frequent poster on the Money Making Mondays thread on the Facebook group, and she will share some goodies that she has sold and some stories to go along with them. Thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.